Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. I'm Robert Crowther, and today we're going to be talking about some arch comic book villains and some nefarious real-life scientists. Joining me is Rachel Adams, who's the Special Projects Coordinator at the Center for Science and Culture. Many of those projects happen to be documentaries and short videos that she works on. I'm sure many of you are familiar with because she's the primary video editor. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Rob.
Okay, we're going to talk today about something that everyone else is already talking about, and I do mean everyone because everyone is pretty much either seen or spent some money on the new Marvel Comics movie Avengers Infinity War, and it has now grossed over $1.8 billion worldwide, according to Wikipedia, and for this one, I will assume that Wikipedia is right. It's the fourth highest grossing film of all time, as well as the highest grossing film of this year. It's the highest grossing superhero film of all time, set an opening weekend box office record, and became the fastest film in history to reach $1 billion. So I'm pretty sure that a lot of people listening have probably seen the film. And Rachel, you have seen the film.
I have.
And in general, what did you think?
I thought it was really good. I mean, it was an adequate finale, I guess, to the buildup they've been doing for what, 10 years now?
Yeah, a long time.
So, yeah, it was an exciting, fun film.
So, some of our listeners may be wondering what this has to do with intelligent design or Darwinism, and we will get to that. But first, I thought maybe, Rachel, as somewhat of a fan of the films, maybe you can briefly give us an overview, just a little bit of like what the movie's about. And I'm not too worried about spoilers because I think at this point it's been out for more than a month. Most people probably have seen it or heard about it. So you can just tell us briefly what it's about so we can set it up.
Yeah, well, so for the last 10 years with all these different superhero movies, they have been hinting at this big bad villain who's going to come and be worse than all the other ones, who's in some of the infamous end of credit scenes that everyone waits around for. Right. So anyway, in this movie, he finally shows up with his plan that no one knows what it is. And all the superheroes we've been getting to know through all these movies are all teaming up to figure out what's happening and then stop it. So throughout the whole movie, the other thing we've been discovering is that there's these things called the Infinity Stones, and we don't really know what they do. And in this film, the reveal of Thanos' plan is that he wants to gather all these Infinity Stones and use them to wipe out half the population of the entire galaxy. So that's what our superheroes are trying to stop.
Wow, half the population of the entire galaxy or universe, maybe. I'm not sure which, but regardless,
yeah,
it's a lot of people.
That's a good point.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the motivations of the villain are here and some of the similarities we see to motivations of other actual nonfiction characters in our own world.
Sure. Well, unlike a lot of the bad guys in Marvel, who are just, they've been wronged somehow, and so they're just on this massive vengeance trip. Thanos has, on his own planet, watched the people run out of resources and then eventually go extinct, mm-hmm. his own people. And so he's convinced that if things are left to their own devices, the population of the universe or galaxy or whatever will grow too big, they will run out of resources and go extinct. So this is actually his grand plan to save the universe, is to intentionally decrease the population so that as a whole, all the species can survive longer because they won't use up their resources. He continually refers to his plan as a merciful thing to do, so that people won't suffer.
So he's going to...
Which I think some people maybe don't feel that way about his plan.
Right. The half of people who are randomly wiped out. And his idea is that because they're a drain on the resources of the universe, that we should just get rid of them in order to make sure that the rest of the population survives. Is that right?
Yeah, it's true. And you actually find out he's actually been doing this planet by planet before now. He's just like gone there with his armies and randomly killed half the people. But now he's discovered if he gets the Infinity Stones, it can be painless and it can be immediate. It'll be like they never existed in the first place.
So it sounds like the mercy he's showing is to the universe, not to the people.
Yes. Actually, at the end, when they ask him what he's going to do when it's all over, he says, I'm going to look out on a grateful universe.
Yes.
Like, Yeah, well, 50% smaller Grateful universe, maybe.
But. So that's in the Marvel Comics universe. But it turns out that in the real world, there are some people that you realized have some similar motivations, maybe, that are even less humanitarian than Thanos's. Why should that concern us? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, so I was watching this movie, and I don't know, Marvel's never been known for being, like, super deep and philosophical.
Right.
But I was sitting there and listening to him and thinking, this just sounds weirdly familiar. And it turns out I'd actually read about it on ENV, about the specific one that came to mind was Eric Pianka, who gave a talk. It was in 2006 that one of our people we know had been at, where he actually advocated for something very similar. He said, we're running out of resources, humans are killing the Earth, and so if we're going to survive, we need to shrink the population by 90%. I mean, Thanos is going small.
Right. Eric Pianka is an ecologist and a biologist, and he has become, because of this, known as Dr. Doom. And his method of getting rid of people is not some science fiction infinity stone. He thinks that the most effective way to do it is to let Ebola run wild. And that's scary when you think about what's happening in Africa and other places around the world right now where there are Ebola outbreaks.
Yeah, which, I mean, I don't know if he's saying we shouldn't do anything about Ebola or if he's just saying, like, well, this might happen. I don't really know what he has in mind, but just the idea that that's an acceptable solution to our problems is to just not care about or save the lives of anybody. A lot of other people have mentioned Paul Ehrlich in discussing this movie.
The Population Bomb, which was written in the 60s and was quite influential then in making people think we needed something in the way of population control, whether it was limiting the amount of births or something like that. He was not as radical as Pianka, but he's still, these ideas are not exactly new, and these are not in movies. So there is a strain of, I guess you'd say, anti-human exceptionalism that is really sort of a materialist worldview.
Yeah. And I think seeing humans as a problem that needs to be solved, as just a species whose population is overrun and so we can diminish it. Mm-hmm. That's how they talk about the deer population, right, in eastern Washington and eastern Oregon. There's too many deer, so we're going to let the hunters go at them, right?
Right.
And this is essentially taking that idea and saying, well, humans are the same way. They can just get too big and not solve their own problems, so there needs to be less of them. That is a materialist worldview, because if you think we're just another animal, then that makes sense. Whereas if you think that humans are different from animals and they're actually a solution to problems, like we can come up with solutions, we can implement them, solutions that don't involve killing people, innovation
right.
and imagination, and all these things, that's what allows you to recognize problems without going to these solutions that really dehumanize people and are dangerous.
It is an anti-human sort of viewpoint that we're just another animal in the forest, sort of, you know, nature red in tooth and claw. And the way we control, like you said, the deer population or any other animal population is to regulate it. And then we figure out a way to control that environment. And this is the same sort of thing. So people are just animals that need to be regulated mm-hmm. at that point. And that is troubling on so many different levels.
Right.
So now we are seeing an anti-human exceptionalism, materialist worldview coming into pop culture. I mean, nothing is more pop culture probably than comic books and now the graphic novels and then the movies that come out of them. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're seeing a move in that direction.
Well,
and which isn't that great.
Well, I would say yes and no, though, right? Because, yes, this view is getting a hearing, but it is coming out of the mouth of the arch-villain. The worst of the worst that Marvel can come up with is the one saying
That's
these
true.
Things. And Captain America, who's been the moral center for, you know, the whole time, is the one saying that that's not right. Or, as he likes to
right.
say it multiple times, we don't trade lives. So I don't think it's discouraging that they're getting play at all. I think it's actually better that pop culture is recognizing that this is a real threat, these kinds
of
Yeah,
it's views. An issue to be discussed and dealt with.
Yeah, and he's not the hero.
That,
you know?
That's true. I think some of my seeing this is from what I was reading about Thanos and his views and then reading how people were responding
yes.
to that. And it was surprising to me how many people thought, yeah, he's exactly right. You know, maybe his idea is not that bad because we are ruining the environment or doing all these things that are endangering the species going forward. And people were, they were at least considering it that maybe he wasn't that far off. And when you take that to Eric Bianca or Paul Ehrlich as a lesser nefarious version of that, you can see where a lot of people maybe started to be swayed, even though it comes from a villain like Thanos.
That is true. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see, because this was only part one, whether Marvel can actually come up with a convincing rebuke to this villain.
That's a good
point.
It will be interesting to see how they handle the storyline going forward, because he's not done yet, and there will be more movies, especially when you make $1.8 billion. It's unlikely there won't be a lot more of those movies.
Right. And will we get to the end of the second part of this story and see not only that, wow, he's a terrible, not person, terrible alien, but also that he was wrong, that this is not the way things are, that people are different from deer, and that it'll be interesting to see if they can, in all their superhero pop culture-y glory, actually come up with a persuasive and satisfying answer to the question they're asking.
Well, I hope so.
Me too.
I want to thank you, Rachel, for being with us today and sharing some of your thoughts and insights on this.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and for those of you interested in following this and other related stories, be sure to go and check out our daily news blog at evolutionnews.org. And that is where Rachel's first article on this appeared. And there may be more coming, I would think, in light of more movies. And then we deal with all sorts of the issues surrounding human exceptionalism, materialist worldviews, and intelligent design issues and the kind of worldviews and philosophy that spin off from that. So I would encourage listeners to check that out at evolutionnews.org. Again, Rachel, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rob.
I'm Robert Crowther for the Center for Science and Culture and ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.